The murder of two men forces their families to wrestle with impossible questions. Who is forgiveness for? Does everyone deserve a second chance? Follow season two of The Letter, Ripple Effect, at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the Jack and Spike Show.
Welcome to the Jack and Spike Show. Burien city manager moves to replace the police chief. His campaigning ban fight rages. Geez, anybody ever get chewed out by their boss?
I know, right? In the paper.
Anybody ever get chewed out by their boss before they go on air? I mean, must be a rough thing for the chief of police.
You know what, though? But that's what separates the pros from the wannabes. Right? Because when the curtain goes up,
it's showtime, baby. All right. Seattle police search for a person who drove over unoccupied tents. That's what all this rhetoric gets us? Or do you think it's the anti-homeless person rhetoric? Or do you think that it's the it's someone just drove over of tents?
I think it's the anti-homeless rhetoric.
Really?
Yep. And the dark underbelly of this story is when they figured out that the police were chasing the whole farm.
No, let's get into it, man. This is a crazy story.
Somebody downtown, I think it was 3rd and James, drove up on the sidewalk and rolled over some tents. And the police spotted the vehicle on the next street over almost immediately afterward and started chase. And as soon as they figured out there was a property crime and nobody in the tents, they stopped chasing the guy.
That's weird, man. That's because I would imagine, isn't that some version of attempted murder?
I would, yes.
Like Schrodinger's homeless person, right? Not to make a bit out of it.
No, I hear you. But you're shooting at a shadow. You're trying to kill somebody, right?
Right. So my thought about it is have we gotten so heightened about our rhetoric around homeless people that not an average person, but someone who's deeply mentally ill finally kind of just loses it? I'm just assuming here. Now, they could have just driven up on the side of the road, right? I mean, it's a
maybe
potential.
A ball rolled into the street in an attempt to not hit a child playing at 11:30 at night in downtown Seattle, which is a possibility.
Always a possibility.
Right? You roll up on the sidewalk and a few tents have to pay the price for safety.
You know, I was up on Capitol Hill and I saw a group of I hate to use this term, but they're like zombie people in front of the QFC up there. It's on Broadway.
Yeah, under the influence of whatever they got their hands on.
Probably right? Fentanyl and Trank. Yeah. And at first I thought that they were all talking to each other. I thought that they were all, because they were standing in a circle.
Okay, yeah.
And they were just right in front of that poor QFC, which if you've not seen that QFC recently.
Oh, yeah, I know exactly.
I've seen stores in Gaza that look better than that QFC.
No, I hear you, man. My daughter lives up there, and I've stopped shopping there on the way to her house.
So I see this group of men and women out front, and I think that they're talking to each other as I'm going to go get my hair cut. Mm-hmm. And what I actually notice is that they are so out of it. They are so blown out of their minds that they are just, their mouths are opening and closing because they're nodding in and out of consciousness, right?
Oh, wow.
But here's the thing. It was kind of a fantastic thing to see because they're standing up while simultaneously fading in and out of consciousness. You know, like kind of like how horses sleep standing up.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
But they're doing that in just plain sight. And I'm looking around and I'm saying, well, why isn't anybody doing anything? And then I see a mom with her two kids having to navigate, how do I get into the store past this, you know, this group of fentanyl addicts? And I thought, that makes me mad. That makes me mad. Now, it doesn't make me mad enough to want to drive a car into a bunch of tents.
No.
But I'm just saying that if you add rhetoric on top of that, look at these people who are abusing our system. I think that you could potentially get somebody in an Acura SUV driving into this or driving over the, you know, tents at 11:30 p.m., right?
And then when the police, I think it was some story, part of the story where when the guy got out of his car and ran and he threw an axe. I'm not sure. It's not the axe attacker of last a week or two ago.
Because that guy's
actually in jail.
Yeah.
And are people armed when they go looking to take out homeless tents? Are they expecting trouble when they're causing trouble? And just, I mean, that's got to be close to attempted murder.
I think so. I think it's because we moralize homelessness. We make it a character failing.
Yep.
As opposed to just deep mental illness, which is really what it is. And it's, I think the saddest part about it is that what most hyper liberals don't understand is that, so you have all this like just rot mental illness all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And what you've got to do instead of doing all these frenetic programs all over the place is you got to do the Spike O'Neill plan. You got to take one of those old Sears buildings.
Yep. Or the Good Sam Club or whatever it is. Whatever it may be. It's not empty Costco because that business model works. Pay people a living wage and you don't close down your stores.
But
take the empty spaces. Make them triage. pretend we're in, I mean, I hate to keep throwing Gaza as an example, but make pretend there are 1,000 people that need help.
Yeah.
Put in a big facility with a safe environment to process, mental illness assessment, health assessments, you know, whatever's needed.
Yeah.
And move these people from the streets into the system accordingly.
Speaking of, by the way, the Burien city manager is moving to replace the police chief as camping ban fight rages. Now, I'll tell you, as someone who just received a good chewing out from the old MGMT for my behavior yesterday on this show. Well, it was about, you remember when Billy was, for those of you who weren't listening yesterday, Billy was on the show, Billy Sunshine, a man who I love very much.
Mm-hmm.
And Billy possesses the ability to get under my skin in nanoseconds. I am also prone to sporadic fits of rage. Laura, you know this. Spike, you know this, right?
I'm not allowed to say whether I know or not. That's per directive. No, I'm kidding. And yes, so, of course. Of course, we all are, buddy.
So, Nick, you know that I get a little mad from time to time.
Oh, yeah.
So, Billy interrupts me as I'm trying to set up a story yesterday, and I shut down. Now, the reason that I shut down is because I was so emotionally compromised that I was trying to keep my job and Spike's job and Laura's job by not saying something into the microphone that I would regret because I was redlining because I'm on too many steroids and my ex-wife keeps calling me. So, I didn't say anything for, what was it, 8 minutes or whatever?
6.5, 7 tops.
And then afterwards, I apologize to you. Yeah. I apologize to Laura, and today I go into the boss man's office, and I get a good chewing out for my behavior, which I'm okay with.
Yeah,
I'm okay with it.
Okay.
Because when you do something wrong, it's always a good chewing out is always part of the process, right?
Well, good for you.
But in this, the reason I tell that story is because of this. When you do something wrong that affects other people, that makes sense. The Burien city manager trying to replace the police chief for saying, I'm not going to violate federal precedent is not the same, right?
No, actually, not even close.
Not even close.
Not even on the sidewalk next to same.
Right, exactly. So I understand that this might make people feel good about how, you know, the city manager, how do you pronounce this? Aldolfo Bailon, I think is the best way to say it.
Boylan Bailon? I don't know. Kate could tell us. Kate Stone's done a lot of great work on this story, by the way.
They're trying to seek a replacement for the current Burien police chief, Ted Bowe, for simply saying, I can't do this because Burien will get sued, and Burien doesn't have the money to go up against a federal lawsuit, which is completely understandable. And yet, I think that most people would read this as, good, get him out of here. Get somebody in there that'll do the job. But the fact of the matter is that if we take 2 steps back and we look at this from a different perspective, how many different municipalities have been sued for having and enforcing this kind of camping ban? It's a couple dozen. You can Google
absolutely,
it.
Absolutely.
It's a couple dozen around the country. And the cost is enormous because it's a federal lawsuit.
And
right?
You don't have to speculate on how people will react because the comment sections on these various posts are people are saying, about time, get somebody that'll do their job. Well, the King County Sheriff's Office, which was notified by the city manager of Burien that I'm looking to permanently replace our chief for not doing their job, his job. King County Sheriff's Office said, you can't do that for two reasons. First off, you have provided no evidence that Chief Bowe is not doing the job. Mm-hmm. In fact, we have cited statistic after statistic of arrests and prosecutions that the chief is doing his job. Chief Bowe is doing his job. Plus, it's against state law to retaliate against an employee for not enforcing an unconstitutional act.
Yeah.
I mean, it's on the books. You cannot seek to replace this guy. There's politics and personality going on between the city manager of Burien and the police chief of Burien. And I think we're campaigning in public more so than worrying about the due execution of policy or even the protection of the citizens of Burien. I think we're politicking here. And Chief Bowe has the support of his staff in numerous hearings and different, and there's been cases brought, you know, sworn testimony has been given in this incident because the chief says the chief of King County Sheriff, I should say, I can't enforce these laws. They're in contradiction.
Yeah. Patty Cole Tindall.
With their contradiction with other laws. And to your point, I'm not going to put the city or the county in a position where we're going to get sued and cost us a ton.
Right. All criminal code violations are still being enforced, by the way. So you can't remove Chief Bowe for, you know, this is because it's not part of the criminal code, right?
No, I mean, and it's a moving goalpost. First, it was no camping here between this and then it was no camping at all. I mean, right. they've changed the ordinance of what is allowed and not allowed on the streets of Burien. Now, I get it. Nobody wants campers on their sidewalks in front of their business, next to their homes, next to a school. I get it. We all wanted to have this problem addressed, but there's a federal guidelines that say this problem can't just be somebody else's problem.
Maybe
you've got to have shelters in Burien if you move people off the streets, and they don't.
Maybe the city manager just needs to chew out the chief, get him in there. You know what I mean? Like in.
Well, I think the chief's going to call the city manager into his office and close the door right before his shift, too, to get maximum effect.
You know? When you have these kinds of disagreements, right, around mm-hmm. behavior or action or whatever it is, I always find that it's best to hash. Hashing is good. Hashing is healthy, right?
They chop it up, as they say.
You chop it up,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then
she taught me that.
Right.
Seriously, chopping it up, man.
But when you try to do it in the public square, that's when it becomes profoundly awkward. When mm-hmm. you do it like this, like what you were saying, the kind
of
outward politicking.
I think he's campaigning on the issue.
So the question is what can Burien do instead of this camping ban enforcement? And I think the answer would be to try to petition the federal government for some federal dollars to deal with the homeless problem that's in Burien. And then you can actually fulfill the requirements of having a place for people to go when you tell them that they can't be outside.
Address the constitutionality of this ordinance concerns.
Right.
And Burien could decide where to put the tiny village funding that they received. That they dilly-dallied along and almost missed the deadline to get this million dollar grant for a homeless tiny house community.
Yeah.
And they still can't pick a place to put it. And I get it. You know, they picked that one spot right next to 509 that was bordered by a big blackberry forest. But on the other side of it was Kennedy High School.
Residential neighborhood.
Yeah, and Kennedy High School. Yeah. And I get it. That didn't work. But there's got to be a place. And you got to be proactive in solving the problem, not just pushing it into somebody else's neighborhood.
Did you see that piece a while back? Must have been a month ago, maybe 6 weeks ago, talking about how the people who have successfully moved through the tiny home program.
Because
I used to nay all over mm-hmm. the tiny home program. I said, nay, this is awful. This is terrible. But one of the things that I missed, I just didn't look into it, was the amount of people who actually moved through that system because they had stable housing. And sure, they had comorbidities. They had drug addiction. They had whatever it is. But they were able to move from a stable housing then to a rehab to a sober living environment. And I thought, okay, well, it's not the most amount of people, but is that not a certain amount of progress? And shouldn't we be happy with that amount of progress?
Well,
meaning that there's a couple hundred people who are alive today because that program was in place.
We talked about a week ago about the 40% drop in homelessness of our young people because of a program that paid those young people $14 cash and got them on the right track and kept them out of the system. So I guess I say that it's progress, not perfection. We keep seeking these perfection solutions to these problems because we want it to be done. We're done with it and we're tired of it.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to take steps, man. You got to be incremental steps toward the right decision.
Laura, what does the text line say about the old homeless problem? I'm sure a lot of complex and nuanced thoughts that are not reactionary in any way, shape, or form. Yes, Laura, scanning the text line, looking very perplexed, almost scared, frightened, mayhap. I'm having difficulty reading your face right now.
Yeah, it's mixed. I'll say that.
I'm sure it is.
Right,
I can understand the NIMBY mentality of the homeless situation, of course.
Well, I think part of it is that, if I can kind of get a little woo-woo with this, it grieves people to see other human beings suffering.
Yes.
And when your grief is not actionable, meaning you can't do anything with it, it turns into anger. Right? It turns into anger.
With no productive means. So
you will get mad at a city council. You will get mad at a mayor. You'll get mad at the libs out there who won't, you know what I mean? You'll get mad at anybody out there because that grief is so immense. And I think that it might help people if it just makes you so mad when you see homeless people, it might help to think, well, what do I do with this grief? Because human beings have a very hard time witnessing the suffering of other human beings.
Absolutely.
Especially
we're supposed to anyway.
Well, I mean, look at what I saw on Capitol Hill today, right? I mean, that's the worst kind of suffering imaginable.
And you feel for the mom and her kids trying to navigate that horrible situation.
I feel for the people who work in that poor business.
Right.
I feel for the addicts. I feel for the mom. Right. I feel for everybody. But the question is like, well, why am I not coming on my show today and saying, I saw these homeless do-nothing layabouts in front of the QFC. A little mom. Why do I not do that? Because that contributes to the anger that people already have about the circumstance.
Yeah, yeah.
Question you have to ask yourself is, is one, how do you get in touch with that grief and recognize that we live in a society in which people suffer tremendously? But then two, what do I then do with it so that it's actionable, right? So what does Andrea Suarez do it with We Heart Seattle? She goes around, she picks up garbage.
Yeah, and a wonderful gesture of trying to help.
There's a way to work through those emotions, but anger just simply isn't the way to do that. So
it's the fastest emotion triggered, though, is the anger.
Very true. The Seattle City Council on Thursday began considering its first legislative action on the police recruitment. Since six new council members were sworn in, Jason Rance and I were talking about this. You were here too, Spike.
Yeah.
And you too, Annie M. You were all here. We were talking about the amount of officers who are potentially leaving or who are eligible for retirement and how recruitment is such a big issue with
us. The numbers were shocking.
It's really, really bad. And so last year, Seattle received about 2,000 applications and they made 61 hires. Give me the 2,000. I just take them all. I don't really care where they come. Make it police academy. Just anybody who comes on off the street.
That guy make noises. They did like, they expanded their standards. I'm trying to find the correct way to say this. I'm trying to be scary or careful. People of color, people with dreadlocks, people with full sleeve tattoos who were once not even considered for law enforcement jobs.
Yeah, which is a real joke when it comes to the dreadlocks or the full sleeve.
Seriously, I mean, the misconceptions and preconceptions we have about people who have lived that life and now want to help the community by being law enforcement.
Right.
Not to mention the fact that a community who is also mirrors this kind of personal decor. But nice to see a cop show up with full sleeves and dreads. You know? I mean, this guy's lived a little bit.
Right,
he's experienced a little bit more than college football.
Maybe, you know.
And a failed semi-pro career.
Exactly. Also, tattoos are scary, which is why I'll never get one. Right? They frighten me. That's why I draw.
Those are drawn on?
I draw these on every morning. Every morning, I just draw these on my body.
Well,
is
you're
what
good
I do.
And consistent. You look just like yesterday's.
Man. All right. This record, by the way, AM. By Arctic Monkeys. Such a great record. Have you ever heard it?
I haven't, and
so
I have lived such a sheltered musical life. Every time I try something new, I'm shocked at how much I like it.
This was a little past your time when you were finishing, trying new things.
I hear you. Everything I love, I learned at 15 musically, and most people are kind of like that.
All right, when we get back, Boomer to Zoomer, because we got to do a little bit of the old read receipts, explaining what those artists like, because we had a conversation today of what it means to be left on red, and Spike didn't know. So if you ever wonder why your kids aren't responding to your text messages when you know that they read them, we'll explain when we get back right after this.
The Mariners are all about giving you more baseball for your buck. With Mariners Value Games, you can snag seats for as little as $10 to select games all season long. To get your tickets and check out the complete Mariners Value Game schedule, go to mariners.com/valuegames.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now Spike goes from Boomer to Zoomer.
Pregnant pauses. We do that for dramatic effect. What we do that for.
Weren't you all holding your breath?
I was. I thought to myself, is the show off the air? Is it on the air?
I was holding more
Am I going to get chewed out again for that? Maybe.
No, I will. That was my fault.
Okay, all right. Well, getting left on red. What does that mean? Now, earlier in the day when we were doing our pre-show meeting, I was ranting and raving about being chewed out. And Laura and Spike were trying to put the show together. And at a certain point in time, we said, did Frank Shires get the text messages for the stories that we want to talk about? And Laura, you said what about Frank's text messages?
That he reads them immediately. And I know this because it tells me the second I send Frank a text, read.
Now, Spike then said,
how do you know you read it? Quite earnestly. Literally, I have no idea. I mean, my phone, I could show you every texter I got. Nobody ever says.
So on your phone,
yeah,
you can program a thing in that says show when someone has read my text message or allow someone else to see when someone has read my text message. Does that make sense?
And they would know when I have read theirs.
Right.
Conversely,
right? Now, if you are if you have good, healthy boundaries, you turn that off. You don't have it on. Because the whole read option on an iPhone or on a Samsung or whatever it is, is weirdly invasive. You don't want to have it on. Some people leave it on. I have no idea why they do that. But if you see that, if you get left on read, generally a lot of people are thinking, oh, this is a passive aggressive response. Laura, correct?
Yes.
Like if I
read it, but I don't care enough to respond to it right now.
Yeah, and it can be absolutely devastating. You go down an emotional rabbit hole, right? You start spinning. It's the worst feeling in the world. It's kind of like when your boss chews you out right before you go on air.
Yeah, it's how you recover from that.
You just start feeling really bad about yourself, and you go, well, maybe my entire career's falling apart, and maybe I'm not doing so. Why isn't this person reading my text message? It's a thing that happens to people, which is why I don't want to put people through that torture. So I turn it off. But you had no idea that was a feature on iPhone.
I don't even know. I mean, I love the deniability of saying, oh, I didn't see that. Well, I know they know full well I saw that. Can they tell that I've read theirs on their end? Is it got to come from me?
I can check your phone.
Yeah.
Would you?
I think what you were asking too before the show was, how do I turn that on for other people so that I can see everyone's read my text?
It's your choice if someone gets to see that from you, but not the other way around. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
And that's what healthy boundaries are. But I personally think that everybody should have it off at all times. I don't think that that's something that you should just leave on because it creates a weird amount of tension. Between, is this person thinking? Are they not engaged with this? Did they not think my joke was funny? Do they not like my cat pictures? Whatever it might be.
It's like a permanent little, they're typing bubble.
Yeah.
You know, just forever and ever and ever. That's a reader's
seat. You wait.
The worst is when the typing bubble pops up and goes away. Comes up and then goes away. That is the worst.
Like they can't pull the trigger on commenting or responding?
Yeah. So as a boomer, Spike, I don't think you understand like the complexity. And I don't mean this in a negative way, but the complexities of nonverbal phone communication, right? So if I text somebody and they don't text me back within 24 hours, I automatically assume that they are mad at me for something. That's being a millennial. I just automatically assume it. It doesn't mean it's true. I just assume that's the case.
Of course, because we're so conditioned to have instant response.
Exactly.
Or at least instant acknowledgement that they read my text because it says they read it. Not on mine, but on yours. When I spent entirely too long in class and paid entirely too much for my degree in marketing, they taught us that...
I should have gone to WGU.
You betcha.
/Seattle to learn more.
You bet. So... They were talking about email marketing, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't know how long an email sits unread in somebody's email box, but you know how many unread texts do you have? How many unresponsive texts are in your phone today? And people are like, none. Exactly. You know, people know that when they're getting text and they respond to it. People check their text all the time. And if they're not responding to you, to your point, if they're not responding to your text, that's because they don't care.
Right. That was my thought about it. Like, for instance, I texted Laura the other day after work. And I felt awful about it. And then I said, I apologize for texting you after work or whatever it is. That level of millennial neuroses is something that most people don't experience. This is like a strictly millennial zoomer, I think, type affliction. Maybe a little bit of Gen X. But this is something where I realized that I had committed such a dramatic faux pas that I had to reach out to Laura to apologize at great length. For the having the audacity to text her.
It was a quick follow-up text saying, I'm so sorry, please ignore this. And then when I came in, you also said, I'm so sorry that I texted you after hours.
Yeah, dude.
That's the ghost of civil communication skills.
Right, right.
Dying on the vine because nobody cares anymore.
When I was a kid, the rule was you never call anybody on their home phone number before 9 a.m. or after 9 p.m. unless you've planned it in advance. That was the thing. You don't call people.
Or unless someone died.
Unless someone died.
Well, in our house, if the phone rang late, the old man, this better be important. right? And that's the last thing on it was the arbiter of communication, my dad.
Right, yeah.
You know, getting a call at 11 o'clock and like, hey, is
this
bike around?
Did you ever do the thing where your girlfriend was supposed to call you or you were supposed to call your girlfriend, but you couldn't let the phone ring? So she would go. You would say, "I'll call you at exactly 10:30."
Oh, you're standing by.
And you're standing by the phone. And this, Laura, have you ever heard of this?
No, I had a cell phone in high school.
Okay, whoa, Laura, fancy. This is something that you had to do back in like the early 2000s, late 90s, and also
70s. Yeah,
my high school girlfriend Erin, we dated almost the entirety of the time I was in high school. Her dad was a really oppressive guy who later went on to like me very much, but only after I was done dating his daughter. But he had this rule that if the phone rang after 10 o'clock, she was grounded flat out.
Right.
So the way we got around that is that after 10, because we would talk on the phone for hours, because that's what you do when you're 16 and you have mm-hmm. no friends. And so she would sit by the phone, and the second it would, like the ring might go off for a nanosecond, boom, picks it up right there, right? Every single time.
Do you ever have cover noise?
No.
Because you are literally standing, in our house, you have the phone to your ear, the phone on the cord, by the way, for you kids at home, connected to a wall, mm-hmm. and your hand is on the plunger there. Your hand is on the receiver, right? So when it rings, you just, instead of picking up the phone, you just lift your finger.
Oh.
And with your elbow, you hit a metal cup to fall over and make cover noise so that one little ding. Even that is covered.
Right.
When I say Mo was the commissar of communications, I'm not kidding. He came right from Vietnam to our house.
Yeah.
And the rules were the rules, and nobody called after 10 p.m.
Right. This isn't, we'd say, this isn't Vietnam, Spike. There are rules. That's what he would say to you.
My old man, I don't talk about this often. My old man suffered from PTSD, and we didn't know it for decades.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't receive coverage or treatment, I should say, because he wouldn't acknowledge his PTSD. My old man would go up and check the window locks at all hours of the night. He would go outside in the wee small hours of the morning, all seasons, to walk around the house and check the perimeter. And we didn't know. We thought he caught us sneaking out once and was, no, it's because you never felt safe after Vietnam. And that's how we were raised.
Do you have any like lingering effects from that? Like, do you check the locks in your house before you go to bed?
You know, I don't, but my it's funny, my wife does, and she never lived through that. I don't have that.
So my grandfather was in the military as well, and he had this routine every night. He would go through the house, and he would check the locks on every single door and check every single window. I am 36 years old. That man has been dead for 13 years. Every single night, I check my locks and check the window. Even if I want the window open.
Yeah. No, I hear you, man.
I go, is the locks function still working? It's so weird that the kinds of things that get passed down to us. Speaking of, by the way, a man bought his son an octopus. Octopi, that's plural.
It is.
It's a singular. But then it became...
He bought an octopus and now they have...
Yeah.
Oh, no.
We'll talk about it when we get back right after this.
Two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, we got a YouTube channel called The Jack and Spike Show where we put up digital exclusive content. And the digital exclusive content generally is pretty spicy, Spike. You go down that comment section, man, people love to make fun of our YouTube channel for its low subscriber count, which is which is funny because people rarely ever address the arguments that are made in it. Sometimes they do, but most of the time when they want to talk about the stuff, they go, 450 subscribers, LOL. And my thought about that is always like, yeah, I mean, it's we just started it. Like, let me do the math on that. Oh, 90 days ago.
You make fun of how toddlers walk too. Is that a flex for you at home, there,
right,
kids?
Is that a good one there? Yeah. We've been doing this for about 3 months. So, but thanks for your continued support. So, speaking of support, by the way, a dentist in Edmond, Oklahoma, said his son Cal has been infatuated with octopuses since he was 13 years old. Now, that is one of the signs of being a sociopath, and that child needs locked care. So he said every birthday, every Christmas, every holiday, all he would say always was, all I want is an octopus. So the last October, Clifford, the father, He sprang for the real deal. He bought himself a California two-spot octopus to keep in as a pet in a tank, and then it spontaneously gave birth.
Wait a minute! I didn't know you could. I didn't know you could have octopus as octopi.
There's a really great documentary called "The Elephant in the Room," and it's about the Midwest's infatuation with exotic animals. Because most of the states that have laws against exotic animals are coastal states or very close to. In the Midwest, for some reason, they think it's okay to have a big cat as a pet. Meaning like a tiger or a lion or whatever it is.
Serious?
So there's this this great documentary. I think it's on Amazon
Elephant in the
Prime.
Room?
It's called Elephant in the
Somebody
Room.
Somebody own an elephant? Is that why they call it?
Yeah, actually, yeah.
No
and basically
way.
What people do is they go and they spend $5,000 or $10,000 to get a little baby, a tiger or a baby lion. And then they raise it for about a year and then it gets big and then they don't know what to do with it. So they have to call these nature reserves.
Right.
So some of the largest populations of wild quote-unquote lions in the world are in Oklahoma. Can you believe that?
My jaw's dropped.
I mean
it's funny because the coastal states are the ones that have the rules against exotic animal ownership.
Why?
Because they had to put rules in place because people kept buying stuff.
Yeah, look at Tony Montoya, right? Goes out, buys a tiger. What does he need with that thing, right? Point being is that this kid is now having to deal with a lot of little octopuses because they have to feed them all and they have to change the saltwater tank, which is a 10-gallon saltwater tank.
And when you say a lot, it's 50.
50 babies.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And
well, don't octopi... Don't they die after they give birth?
Yeah.
I don't know a lot about nature.
Laura, you know all this stuff,
I
right?
do, because I used to work at the Seattle Aquarium. They are terminal maters, and they also typically have, and they're lucky it was only 50, because usually they can have up to 1,000 eggs, and then they just hope that maybe 3 or 4 survive to adulthood. Octopuses don't usually live longer than a few years, and after they care for the eggs, which are basically like plankton, like these little baby eggs are the tiny little octopus. I looked at one under a microscope once. That's how little they are. But once they've cared for the eggs, usually within like a year,
they're gone.
Yeah.
Is this kid now, I mean, is he going to have to raise these 50 little octopi alone?
He's got them all in little Tupperwares in the tank.
Because they only live, according from this article, they only live for about 2 years apiece. So you got to figure out how he's going to release them back out in the wild.
Wait a minute, of Oklahoma?
Yeah.
The wilds of Oklahoma.
The wild ocean of Oklahoma. You know, the ocean that's right next to Oklahoma that isn't landlocked in any way, shape, or form.
You thought toilet snakes were bad?
Well,
why do you release
them? You know that I used to work with gibbons. And
yeah, but you were doing that through an education, right?
Majority of those gibbons came from circuses or private collectors who adopt them when they're babies because they're super cute. They look like little Ewoks.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. But then as soon as they get older, all of a sudden you realize this thing's trying to gouge my eyes out and blind me and then break my fingers. So what happens is that they then have to give them up. But these creatures are incredibly complex in their social structure. So when they're not raised around other gibbons, you can't reintroduce them into a troop.
Wow.
So you have to basically put them in a cage, which is basically a big old arboretum looking thing.
Yeah.
And then you put them next to another troop. And you hope to God that they socialize and don't try to kill the other ones through the fence. And if they don't, then they have to be isolated for the rest of their lives. These creatures live for something like 20 to 40 years.
Wow.
So the selfishness that people have around, you know, exotic animals is to such a degree that they are willing to sacrifice the well-being of that creature. Not and then put it off onto other people to take care of it as soon as it's not a little baby anymore.
Well, octopuses are incredibly intelligent, too.
Yeah.
So, and it is octopuses, by the way, the pluralization.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's not octopi.
Thank you, Laura, our tour guide at the aquarium.
It has to do with the Latin versus Greek origin of the word.
Looks like I'm going to get chewed out for another thing. Thanks, Laura.
Click octopi.
they need a lot of stimulus. They need toys in their tank. They need challenges.
Really?
Yeah, it's a whole thing. So it is a difficult... It's not like they just get to put that in an aquarium and walk away.
Oh, wow.
Bob Rivers, speaking of octopuses, by the way, man who hired 5,000 octopi to dig a trench in Henderson, Nevada so that he could start constructing his bunker.
Each front.
$7.4 billion more in student loans are canceled from the Biden administration. By the way, totally legal because he's already using law. Doesn't have to go through the Supreme Court. Biden's plan B on inflation, blame the other guy. Works every time. And with state bans on DEI, some universities are finding a workaround. Rebranding, which is like, yeah.
It's just, let's let them forget everything we've ever done.
Yeah, go for it. That'll
start
work.
Start over.
All right, we'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back right after this.